We were talking about that with the kids. And in fact, Regina and I, we were talking. And we thought, you know, whatever would be most common, you know, Jesus would have used that. Whatever he was sitting down for a meal, he would have used that. Whatever was most common. So if you were in San Francisco and you had a group of people, it would probably be sourdough, right? Probably. But what a great, great picture for us. And I think it puts us in a good mind frame when we're talking about our relationships that we have to deal with, right? Because it's not always easy. I talked about forgiveness last week, and we won't dwell on that as much. But I think, you know, I think the key to dealing with forgiveness, no matter what the relationship is remembering what Jesus did for us. There's been plenty of times, and there's been, you know, some horrific things that have happened, you know, in my life that where I didn't think that the person deserved to be forgiven. And then I always have to go quickly reflect on myself and say, well, I didn't either. So I guess we're all even, right? And some of you may know, how many of you remember Roger's sister Karen? Does somebody remember? Maybe not, because it's been many years, actually. In fact, it's probably been close to 10 years now, maybe. So some of you would remember. Well, I wanted to pass along a prayer request because Karen was diagnosed with leukemia some time ago. And Roger and Diane, you may know, some of you know, were on a trip. And they got a call saying, if you want to see her and talk to her alive, you know, this side of heaven, you better come. She's on quite a bit of morphine now, and so it's just in the last days. But this gives us hope because she knows the Lord. She accepted Christ, and I know she's looking forward to that time when she's completely healed of that. And she knows, and the family is very much at peace with that ultimate healing is going to be in heaven. And so be praying for Karen, for Roger. Roger and Diane were actually visiting some friends not far out of Las Vegas, so they had a 10-hour drive to Alturas. So I was talking to Diane yesterday, and she said, yep, we're at hour 6 and 4 more to go. So so be praying for them and rejoicing in the hope, but also be praying for them. We have my daughter's boyfriend is in UCSF Medical Center, and we went over to see him on Friday, and we're much to our delight, the Blue Angels were practicing. And so my wife just begged me to go over and watch him. So I said, you know, what is a guy supposed to do? He's supposed to be, you know, right, be kind to his wife. She's not here, so I can lie all I want. But we had a great time. Steph was with us. We went over and watched the airplanes. And you know what? Being a pastor, I'll admit right in front of all of you, is a kind of a sickness. It's a sort of a sickness. Because you always are thinking pastor stuff. So I love flying. I love the concept of flying. I love everything about flying. I am not afraid of flying at all. My wife was looking at me, and she looked over at me like drooling as the Blue Angels are going by. She goes, you would go up there, wouldn't you? I said, in a heartbeat. I said, I would love to just be in the physical condition those guys have got to be in to be able to go in there. I'd love to be able to go in there without having to throw up or pass out, too, which I guess is quite common when you hit those G's. Before the Blue Angels came, there was a jet going by, and it was really cool. But it was a Navy jet, but it was breaking the sound barrier right in front of us. So it created that, you know, that it's not smoke, but it's you see sound waves. And I've never seen that live. And my Stephanie's there going, Daddy, what is that? And I go, just watch, because she's, you know, it's going, boom, you know, and it was just cool. So you're thinking, okay, what's the pastor part of you? I'm thinking, wow, look at all the technology that's happened. Look at, I mean, just in the amount of time. Could you actually take somebody from the Bible days, bring them here and watch that? I mean, they would think, Book of Revelation happening in front of my eyes. And I thought, here's where I thought, we've improved so much on flying, and yet on marriage, not so much. Think about it. Human relationships. We go back 2,000, 5,000 years, and we look at biblical principles, and we think, you know what? We haven't really improved much on that. You know? So today, we're going to talk about, and all of us have had these times, is how to pull together when you're pulled apart. Sometimes some of the biggest conflicts, have you found this in your marriage? Some of the biggest conflicts you have are over trivial issues. They're not really super important things. My wife and I have gotten into it over important things, but usually, I mean, just by sheer percentages, not quite as much as unimportant things. And every relationship, every good friendship, even good ones have conflict. And if you don't know how to deal with conflict and really resolve problems this way, it can kill your marriage. So I thought it'd be good for us to talk about some fair fighting tips that we learned. The Bible's very clear about this. And if you want to just be directed to your insert here, we'll follow along. All the scripture is there for you. So hopefully that'll help us to be able to cover a lot of ground in a short time. But Mark chapter 3, verse 25 says, "And a family that fights won't last long either." It ought to be a mandatory law, I think, in America that, you know, before you get married, you have to have a class on, you know, how to resolve conflict. Would that be good? I deal with that when I do premarital counseling with people. It's how to, you know, some people think, oh, you know what, we're not going to fight. Everything's fine. We've got everything solved. And tongue in cheek, I tell premarital couples, marriage is choosing who you're going to fight with the rest of your life. Now, obviously, that's, you know, sounds really negative and horrible, but I, you know, in a sense, fights, conflicts, difficulties are going to come, so you really have to commit to the fact that, hey, you have to be able to do some problem solving. So, I mean, how many of you before your marriage, where you were married, learned any kind of conflict resolution skills? Anybody? Did you? Yeah. The only reason I did is because I got a master's degree, you know, in marriage and family counseling. I thought, this is going to help me. Not a bit. Didn't help a bit. Because, you know, you can't counsel yourself, right? So anyway, but there were some things I learned, and I hope, hopefully we can pass this along and be of help. But if you're not married, you can also use these principles at work, with your best friend, with, you know, other relationships, with your children, whatever. And we'll have some, you know, we're going to have conflict. If we have relationships, we're going to have conflict. So, and you know what? We as a church family, we love each other. And we get to know each other so well that sometimes, I mean, we're brothers and sisters, so sometimes we treat each other like it, right? So this will be of help to us too. James 4:1 says, "Do you know where your fights and arguments come from? They come from the selfish desires that war within you." There it is. That's just as plain as can be, right? We're all selfish. So what causes these conflicts? The Bible is very blunt. The Bible says that conflict is caused by selfishness. I'm selfish, I want what I want, you want what you want, and when those two things collide, that's called conflict. That's why if you're, for example, if you're married and you use, how many of you, anybody use an electric blanket? You know, okay. If, right, two dual controls though, right? Dual, absolutely. That's wisdom right there. Because why? We're never going to be the same temperature, are we? So, you know, one's on, you know, the wife's on 9, I'm on 0, and, you know, it's just, yeah, there, is that great? Opposite? Oh, well,
perfect.
Yeah.
Right,
that's it. So,
until the middle of the night.
That's right. Oh, no, there's always those mid-course adjustments that you have to make. That's right. But the truth of it is we're all different. Not even our body temperatures are the same, and we've got some things. And, you know, especially when I, you know, counsel with people, you know, you look at probably the top 5 areas of conflict are money, sex, in-laws, children, and communication. Those are, you know, kind of the big 5. And those are all areas. Yeah, you can add some. That's right. But here, let's talk about how do we deal with conflict. These are just some ones that typically we do. First of all is the my way kind of conflict resolution. And that's basically saying, I win. I will win at any cost. I'm getting my way. I'm right, you're wrong. And my way is the only way, and I will assert my will until you finally yield and give up. And that's some people, that's their way of dealing with conflict. Not effectively, but, you know, that's one way. Another way people talk about is that no way. That is I avoid. Also very, very common. I don't want to fight. This is true in some cultures, too, that they are anti-conflict. And so there's no way you're getting me into a fight. I'm, you know, I back away from conflict. I withdraw. It's like, fine. That's where the word whatever came from. Okay, whatever. If you want to win, fine. I'm leaving. And it's not, again, not a very effective way. Another way is, okay, your way. And that is simply, I give in. I want your approval so badly, I'll roll over and I'll play dead. I want this thing over so quickly that if you want your way, I'm just not a person anymore. I'd rather have a peaceful relationship. But really, what happens in those, it produces a lot of bitterness. Because people stuffing. That's why I've had, situations with people where they'll call me and say, I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, he just exploded. All of a sudden, she just kaboom. What was that? Well, that's probably time. That's probably a lot of stuffing. That's probably a lot of rolling over, but still having all those emotions, and that bitterness can really come up. Then there's number four, which may sound pretty good, and that's halfway. Halfway. And that's where I compromise. So you win some, I lose some, and we're all happy, and it's better than the previous ones, but there's even a higher level of us dealing with conflict resolution, dealing with conflicts, even a better one, and that is the our way. And that simply is characterized by the statement, I care. I care about our relationship. I care more than any single issue. We value our relationship more than the things we fight over. And there tends to be, kind of the three stages of marriage where we've got the honeymoon stage. Then there's the party's over stage, right? And then we get into the conflict part and it's the let's make a deal stage. And this all has to do with how do we deal with conflict? So, dating turns to debating, and it happens, right? That's right. Well, we laugh, but it hurts some people. I know people are really hurting over this. It's like, what happened? Everything seemed to be so wonderful and romantic, and you're frustrated, and you feel stuck, and the relationship, there's issues over and over. I think probably the most frustrating is when you have maybe an issue or two or three, where it's just over and over, the same thing over and over. New ones, that adds a little freshness. That kind of stirs stuff up and that. But, some of the same things over and over and over again, that's hard. So here are some steps that I have seen work. I have, perfected none of these. I have tried all of them, and I find out they work. So here you go. Here's six of them. Now, I don't want some of them may sound trite to you, but I mean them with all my sincerity and all of my heart. The first one is absolutely key, and that is call on God for help. Pray about it. Before you go to the other person, talk to them about the problem. Talk to God. This may solve the problem right there. There are times when I have lost it, haven't been the husband I should be, and just by praying over an issue would have solved my problem right there. So you pray about it, then, because God may change you, and then the problem's solved, or God may change their heart without you even talking about it, which, I mean, that's a beautiful thing too, right? So many things, so many things could go smoother if we would just take time before to pray about it first. Before you're going to approach somebody with an issue, before you're going to approach your spouse, even your boss, even your, a friend, this goes so much better. It's called, practice what I call, vertical venting. We do it horizontally. We vent, we tell everybody, we speak. But, vertical venting is when we tell God how we feel, what we're disappointed in, why we're bummed, why we feel like we've been ripped off in life. We do that with people. And God knows what we're going through. And so, some people say, oh, you mean you can tell God when you're mad? Of course, he already knows. Read the book of Psalms. David, boy, you talk about venting sometimes. There's my enemies. I hate them. Let's kill them. That's pretty good venting right there. So he cries out to God. He tells God his heart. So don't be afraid to tell God your heart. It's like, God, my husband, my wife, they are not responding to me. I know your Bible even says, you can get quoted verses and say, they should be doing this. But you know what? You share that with God and you have a time of talking about it first. So have you ever talked to a friend about stuff and you just feel better just because you've talked to them about it? I've had that happen. Just talking about it. And being able to talk to God, it adds a relief. So some of you say, well, I'm really mad. Is it okay to pray to God mad? Remember, he gave you those emotions. My first master's thesis I did was on anger, the subject of anger. And I could tell you a real deep theological reason why I did it, but the bottom line is because I got angry a lot. I thought, this will help me too, you know? But the truth of it is God gave you your emotions and he wants us to use them correctly. And so come to God and say, hey, here's how I feel, and you just lay it out. James, continuing in James 4, verse 2, it says, you quarrel and fight. Why? You do not have because you do not ask God. Is that interesting how he ties those two together, fighting and praying together? This is foundational. Conflict often occurs when we expect other people to meet needs that only God can meet. When you do that, you're really, in a sense, really making that person God to you. When you set up your spouse or you set up a friend or something, you say, you know, God, they should be meeting my emotional and spiritual needs. Hey, those are things only God can do. Nobody can meet all of your needs, you know. One day you stood, those of you who are married, you stood in front of a bunch of people and you said, I do. But in the back of our minds, what we were really saying is, I expect. You know, because we have all these, you think, oh, I married the person of my dreams. This is going to be great. Life's going to be wonderful. I mean, finally, you know, I'm going to be fulfilled in life. And you're thinking, this person is the answer to all of my hopes and dreams. And then life starts happening and conflict starts happening. You think, life's going to be great from now on. And I'm not saying that, like, can't be great from that point on. But it's not quite sometimes what we expect. And we talked about that, you know, the expectations that sometimes we have. But the only perfect person, if I could use the word person in this context, the only perfect person that you will ever be able to have in your life is God himself. And so we have unmet needs because we don't ask God. How do I know when I'm looking to other people instead of God to meet my needs? Again, anger. Makes me angry. Anger is a warning light. And it says, I'm expecting somebody else to meet my needs. And that's true in any relationship. When I have a need for you to be on time and you're late, I have a need for you to have the meal cooked and it's not. Or fill in the blank. I have a need for you and fill in that blank and it doesn't happen. Well, then I'm disappointed and so forth. And God says, you know, if you're angry, why don't talk to me about this first? And he says, you have not because you ask not. Sometimes you say, well, there's some kind of private, intimate things in my marriage. Is it okay to pray about those? Again, asterisk, God created those, okay? You say, even my intimate life, yes, your physical part of marriage. God made all that. Yeah, I can talk to God about that? I'm disappointed in this? I can talk, yes, of course you can. Second thing, we have to confess our part in the conflict. This sounds like we're already giving up. I know some of you are thinking, great, that's just the white flag. That's just going to give him an opportunity to just, you know, put his foot in the door and, you know, now I'm all wrong, or him or her. Before I start accusing and attacking, I've got to do a frank evaluation and ask myself, how much of this conflict is my fault? How much is of this did I instigate in all of this? So am I the problem? I need to do my part. Jesus used an analogy. Look what he said. In Matthew 7, he used this analogy. He says, so why do you see the piece of sawdust in another believer's eye and not notice the wooden beam in your own eye? How can you say to another believer, let me take the piece of sawdust out of your eye when you have a beam, when you have a beam in your own eye? I mean, think of this picture. Now, Jesus is using hyperbole here. This is actually, Jesus is being funny. This is a comedy section. We don't laugh at this passage because we don't really understand Hebrew humor. Hebrew humor in general is by exaggeration. For instance, Jesus says, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to go to heaven. That is, Jesus is making a humorous statement. It's exaggeration. You know, he said something else about the Pharisees. He talked about the Pharisees. He said they strain at a gnat and they swallow a camel. See? These people, they would laugh when he's saying that. That would be his humorous part of his sermon. And so this is an exaggeration when he's saying this. So, but what is he really saying? He's saying, check yourself first. We all have blind spots. We all have areas that we need to look at. You know, I've heard pastors, you know, try to overanalyze this. It's like, well, it's all a matter of perspective. If you take a small piece of wood and you put it up close, well, it looks like a beam, and the beam's over there. The truth of it is Jesus is just saying, look at yourself first. Ask yourself, am I being realistic? Am I being insensitive? Am I being oversensitive? See? Am I being too demanding? Am I being ungrateful? What is it that's caught my eye, which really he's using his eye to illustrate our life. What is it in my life that really needs to be dealt with before? So before I get involved in dealing with, you know, with my spouse, I need to look at myself and see, hey, what could be causing this? And last week we talked a little bit about this whole thing with the excuse, we're just not compatible. It's a myth. That's just, and it has like an innocent sound to it, doesn't it? I've heard people say, why did you divorce? Oh, it's just a matter of incompatibility. Again, top experts, we quoted a couple of psychiatrists last week that said, that's a complete myth. That whole idea of incompatibility, it's just an excuse for people to hide their own weaknesses and failings and immaturities and misunderstandings and mistakes. In fact, really, misunderstandings and mistakes can be corrected if we're just willing to do that. It's just being willing to work through those. You have misunderstandings, and you have difficulties, and you have mistakes at work, right, many of you? But you're still employed. Why? So you got to work through them. Are you kidding me? Don't want to lose my job. If we would make as much effort sometimes as keeping our marriage as we do just keeping ourselves employed, there might be some real things we could learn there. The problem is that, sometimes we lack complete honesty in that. My wife and I got a real privilege to hear some years ago Dr. Archibald Hart, and if you ever get a chance to hear him, great Christian psychologist and has written a number of books. Just great, great guy. He said this, and I want to read you this quote. He says, if people can be divorced for incompatibility, I cannot conceive why all of us are not divorced. Right? We talk about, all of us are incompatible. Think about it. You put a man and a woman together, well, there you go. Right? We're going in with two strikes, right? We're so different. We think so different. And that's okay. But I thought, marriage is a life process of overcoming our differences. 1 John 1:8 says this. If we say we aren't sinful, we're deceiving ourselves and the truth is not in us. See, we all have an infinite capacity for self-deception. I can blame you for my problems all day long, right? You can find somebody to blame. But it's not incompatibility. If I do that, it's basically selfishness and immaturity. That's why I'm blaming you for my problems, when people split over differences, it's because either one of them, or usually both, is selfish and not willing to change. Sounds innocent, but it is a major issue. Isn't it kind of embarrassing? It's us. Isn't it embarrassing to say, my marriage broke up because of selfishness and immaturity? Incompatibility does sound a lot better, right? But the truth of it is, and maybe we're unique, but that's basically where Cindy and I, live. Usually it's me. Okay, let's move on because that's getting rather convicting. So let's move to the third one. Okay, here we go. So number three is what you need to do. We got all this conflict, all right? First 2 points, we've messed it all up here. Now, three, let's convene a peace conference. A sit down, face the issues meeting. It usually takes more than one, by the way, because sometimes these can get really, really long. Conflict is very seldom, I don't want to say never, but seldom resolved accidentally. It must be dealt with intentionally and deliberately. It won't resolve itself. Conflict gets worse. If you notice this, conflict gets worse when you leave it alone. When you don't deal with it, it just gets worse and worse. Hearts grow harder. Positions get solidified. Bridges get broken down, beyond repair. And that's, the only way to deal with conflict is to really face it. And that's tough. If there's some unmet needs, some unresolved issues, some things that aren't being met, whatever, there's that conflict, ignoring them will never work. I think maybe this is just in my experience, but this is kind of a guy thing. We just kind of suck it up and just say, let's not deal with it. Everything's fine. I don't know if that's some of you ladies too, but just why deal with it? Why stir the pot, But the truth of it is it's already stirred. It's already boiling. You might as well deal with it. And the only way to resolve conflict is to face it. The Bible's very specific about this. even when it talks about our altars, and it's even can be applied even to our communion time. But look what this says in Matthew 5, 23 and 24. So if you're offering your gift at the altar, and remember there that another believer has something against you, leave your gift at the altar. First go away and make peace with that person. Then come back and offer your gift. So, hey, if you're at church and you're giving an offering, use that analogy, or take communion, or you remember that you've got conflict with somebody, take care of that first, you know. Now, don't stir up conflicts just so you don't have to give offering, all right? It just popped in my head, okay? I'll always have somebody mad at me, so right before I give, right? Maybe that's just my sick way of thinking. But here's the truth of it. What is he saying, bottom line? It's impossible for me to worship with bitterness in my heart. You ever had something? I've had this happen, and I've got to be up here. Have you ever had a situation with somebody, and you're so distracted by it, it pops in your head? You could be driving, and you start thinking about it. You could be working out, you start thinking about it. You're trying to worship, try to sing. You start singing a song, and all of a sudden, boom, you're thinking about that. God knows that what we're made of, that could be so distracting. And he says, take care of it first. Then come and worship God. It's impossible to worship God with that bitterness in your heart, that unresolved conflict. That's why the Bible says in 1 John 4:20, if someone says, I love God, but hates a Christian brother or sister, that person is a liar. If we don't love people we can see, how can we love God whom we have not seen? Well, you say, well, the reason for that is because God's never disappointed me. That's why I think Satan loves to get people in fights on their way to church. You ever have this happen? Now, Cindy and I solved this years ago. We come in separate cars. You got to get creative with this. But have you noticed this? What is it? It's a weird thing. Sunday mornings, you're rushing around trying to get things, and you'll get into squabbles driving on the way to church. You get out of the car and you go, what was that all about? That was so stupid. I have a feeling, Satan doesn't like us fellowshipping. He doesn't like us worshiping. And if he can stir stuff up or bring something up, that'll happen. And so you have to do it or take separate cars. But 1 Peter 3:7 says, husbands, in a similar way, live with your wives with understanding, since they are weaker than you. Honor your wives as those who share God's life-giving kindness, so that nothing will interfere with your prayers. Again, God puts some things together we wouldn't think. Our marriage and our prayer life. You see that? He says, hey, you've got to get it together, because that can really hinder your prayer life. Well, I've seen that in a practical sense, right? You ever been in a squabble with your spouse and then does it ever pop in your mind? You know what? We need to just take some time and pray. It's like, you don't want to pray. You're in the middle of a fight here, so what's with that? You don't want to pray. But this is how important conflict resolution is. You take that time. You can have a peace conference and so forth. Jesus says, don't ignore it. Deal with it. Face it. It doesn't matter if you're the offended person or the offender. Listen to this. It's really important. It doesn't matter if you're the offended person or the offender. God says you take the initiative. Don't wait. It's the only two times when you have to go to somebody and make things right, whether if you've been offended or if you're the offender. Otherwise, you're off the hook, right? I hope you're getting, I kept catching the sarcasm of that. He's saying, just go, When does God say to this? As soon as possible. Ephesians 4:26 says, do not let the sun go down on your anger. So what is that? Let's just give us a 24-hour maximum, right? Why? Because it can fester, it can create bitterness, it can create anger, so take care of it as soon as possible. Just a couple of quick suggestions with regard to having a peace conference together, and that is this, choose the right time. Timing is everything when you're dealing with sensitive issues. Don't drop a bomb on your spouse and then on your way to work, by the way, kaboom, and then you leave. That's terrible timing. Also, I say, don't get any conflict resolution. Don't have a peace conference in bed. Save that for happy things. Because you know what happens? One of you is on one kind of schedule, right? So what happens? I start pouring out my heart, and then the next thing I hear is, sleeping going on, or vice versa. You know, it's like laser pouring out your heart. You're saying, you know, I'm really frustrated, and all of a sudden, this big snore happens. That, you're just downhill from there. Okay, that is, that's the opposite of peace happening. So when do you do it? When's the best time to have a peace conference? Yeah. So I know people are pointing. I don't know where to look now. You know the time. Here's the time to have your peace conference. Have it when you're at your best. So maybe going out to dinner. Maybe at lunchtime. Maybe you're gonna have to pass the kids off to somebody. You know, whatever you got to find that best time when you're both awake and you can really focus on it. Secondly, you know, and turn the phone off. You got to do that. That just could be distracting. Choose the right place. Again, I would say if you've got kids, my practical advice is if you're really going to have to sit down and talk about some important issues, get somebody to watch the kids. Because they'll come in and out. They'll want something or whatever and have their own little dramas and so forth. You know, you've got to have the right place, you know. The thing is, your marriage, some of you, you know, and you may know people whose marriage is on the edge of divorce, and maybe you can't even stand a look at the other person. That's sad. I've dealt with that over the years, you know, with people just going from absolutely in love with each other to now I can't even look at them. I can't even stand it, you know. But, you know, if you take the right place and if you can, just sit together, if you can do it without, you know, squeezing the life out of them, hold hands. Maybe just take a time to pray. Now, some of you are saying, wow, we don't really pray. We haven't really prayed much, you know, our whole marriage. It's going to feel awkward, but maybe it's a great place to start, you know. And just ask God for wisdom. And then come with the right attitude. Come up with a positive attitude. Don't bring your list of 50 things they're doing wrong. And you blow them all up, you know. You've got them listed from important to semi-important to not so important. And you've got all this list, and you say, all right, here we go. You pull out the legal pad, and since we've got some time, I'm going to tell them all to, you know, never found that super productive. Come ready. When I say a positive attitude, I'm saying come ready to listen. Come ready to compromise, to understand the person's side. Take that initiative. Why should you go to that person if they, you know, you think, why should you go to that person if they hurt you? Because Jesus says so, that's why. And show some maturity in the relationship. You know, try to understand them before you focus on being understood. And that's really tough. Now we're going to get real practical, number four. And that is to cut out abusive language. Learn to attack issues without attacking each other. My wife and I have literally, if she was here, she would vouch for this. There have literally been times when we have said to each other, okay, let's not attack each other, let's attack this issue. Because we have to remind ourselves of that. Because it's so easy to identify maybe just a difference of opinion as that's you. My opinion isn't me. My opinion is my opinions, my thoughts on a certain issue. And sometimes we make that. So establish some grounds for fighting fair. One of the things my wife and I said before we were married is we will, and we do this with our kids too, we will not call each other names. We're going to be gone this week for a little, you know, 21-year anniversary. We have never called each other a name. I think one time she called me a jerk, but I totally deserved it. because I was being a jerk. But we don't call each other names. We really don't. I totally did. I can remember the situation. But I know I'm not going to tell it. But just trust me, I was being a jerk. But you know what? That's really important. Don't call each other names. Don't, you know, you are such, don't do that. There's inflammatory phrases, there's words, there, you know, abusive language. In fact, let's look at this scripture. Ephesians 4:29 says this. Do not use harmful words, but only helpful words, the kind that build up and provide what is needed, so that what you say will do good to those who hear it. Don't threaten with divorce. If we don't get this solved, I'm going to divorce you. That's again, harmful words. We've got to communicate in love. Jesus talks about that, speaking the truth in love. You know, during war, You know, at least in the past, we've had, you know, arms treaties where we've gotten together, even with nations we're at war with, and says, okay, few things we're not going to use, okay? Nuclear war, mustard gas, you know, biological warfare, right? We have these arms agreements. Even though we're fighting a battle, we agree there's certain weapons we're not going to use because they're too deadly and too catastrophic. You know, have that in your marriage. Say, look, we're gonna struggle about things. We're gonna have conflicts about things. But let's just make these off limits. We all know we've got buttons of each other's we can push. You know what? You know what I'm saying? My wife can make me mad in a second. Push certain buttons. I can make her mad in a second. Push certain buttons. But why? That never solves stuff. Makes you mad, but never really solves stuff. And in our marriage, we need to do that same thing. Eliminate some deadly verbal tools. The Bible's specific about what not to use. Look at this in Colossians 3:8. Also, get rid of your anger, hot tempers, hatred, cursing, obscene language, and all similar sins. Don't lie to each other. You've gotten rid of that person you used to be and the life you used to live. He's talking about the fact that Jesus should make a difference in our life and the way we talk and so forth. He talks about rage. You're not allowed to overwhelm each other with anger. We guys can do that. We can get ourselves, you know, we can scare our wives into, you know, shutting down. But God's saying, don't do that. That's terrible and ridiculous and doesn't solve anything. Don't use insults, just belittling and labeling and jabbing. And ego. It talks about obscenities and profanity. And sometimes we can get real dramatic with that. Throw in a few, you know, swear words and wow, we can really make our point. But God says that doesn't. In fact, you know what's scary? The Bible says that we're going to give account one day for every idle word we say. Boy, can you imagine if we just took just our marriage and thought about all the idle things that we say at times? That's scary by itself. And then he tells us to tell the truth. And I've got to tell you, time and time again, I've heard people say, well, I can't tell them the whole truth because I'm just protecting them. And let me tell you, you're not protecting them from anything. I mean, I think in a sense that'd be the equivalent of a doctor saying, look, if I tell him he's got cancer, wow, you know, that might really upset him. That's going to change his whole life. Yes, but then I'll be knowing what I'm actually dealing with. And some of you have got, you know, cancers in your life, and you say, well, I'm just protecting him. I'm just protecting her. I don't want. And some of these things you've really got to talk through. Why? Because you're carrying it. You think about it. If it's not something you think about on occasion, then it's probably not significant. But if it's something you think about, whether you know it or not, it's affecting you, and it's affecting your relationship. So that's just a little guideline. If you say, wow, it happened 40 years ago and hadn't thought about it until you just, you know, okay, then you're probably okay. But if it's something you think about every now and then, once a month, it's probably something that should be shared and dealt with. So don't use side issues. When we talk about this whole idea of abusive language, because you say, okay, well, I'm not going to swear, but sometimes what we do is we're upset about one issue, so make a side issue kind of the thing. We're upset about the fact that, you know, maybe our intimate life isn't going great, so what do? We criticize cooking. Or maybe we're upset because we feel like, well, our husband's kind of disconnected from us, but we really don't want to say that, so instead we get on him because why isn't the lawn mowed? Don't use side issues to deal with the issue. Make the issue the issue. And another one that we classically do is the always and never. You always and you never. See, it never works because you can always pick once. You know, my wife said, oh, you always keep your socks on the floor. And I could say, no, remember the second year we were married was like the third month of that second year. One time I actually picked them up and put them in the hamper. Okay. See, right? That's right. I marked it down. That's right. And one last real practical thing. This isn't Bible, but don't do the mind reading stuff. Don't you hate that? One of you, by default, it could be the husband. Husband, one of you has a better memory than the other. Or one of you has an intuition better than the other. And so, you could see, what's wrong? Well, you know. No, I don't know. Well, you should know. But I really don't know. Well, if you loved me, you would really know what's bothering. And it's like... we never get our point across by being cross. We're never persuasive when we're abrasive to each other. And so when we're arguing, don't assassinate. Just, you know, spell out what it is. We got to hurry. Number five. This just simply is consider my mate's perspective. This is very, very difficult because this is not natural for us. This requires intentional shifting. They have different backgrounds. They have different family makeup. They have, obviously, opposite sex. So it's, you know, there's a lot to, you know, that can overwhelm us. But the better we understand somebody, the more we try to understand. In fact, isn't it funny when in that First Peter passage where he tells us guys to dwell with our wives with understanding? It's almost like, I know he wasn't, but it's almost like God was laughing. You know, it's like, oh, this will be fun. You know, hey, guys, understand your wife. Oh, man, you know. But you know what? It's not as quite as rocket science as we make it. You know what? We listen. How do we understand the other person? We listen. That's also not natural because we really would rather get our point in and we're just kind of waiting for them to get done so we can make some really important statements, you know. It's a matter of listening. And that's hard for all of us. So Romans 15, 1 and 2 says, we must be considerate of the doubts and fears of others. We should please others. If we do what helps them, we'll build them up in the Lord. I talked about this the first week about our doubts and our fears, so I won't deal with that. You can get that online. But, you know, the fact is my doubts and fears seem to make perfect sense to me. But, you know, other people seem really stupid. You know, why do they have those doubts and fears? The truth of it is we need to understand what those are. I gave the illustration, you know, my kids are afraid of spiders, you know, so I'm the spider killer in our family. So, you know, big deal. And that seems silly because, you know, it's like tissue squish. Really not a big deal. But you know what? That's real. They really scream when they have that. So guys, we have fears that our wives would probably look at and go, are you kidding me? Maybe things related to our career, maybe related to, you know, our success or whatever, our business or whatever it might be, our work. And we've got our own fears and doubts. And our wives might think, what are you talking about? You've got a loving family who cares about you. What's the deal? Understanding each other is so, so very important. Philippians 2:4, I love this. Says, each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. The word in the Greek there is skopeo. We get our word scope, microscope, you know, telescope from that. It just means pay attention, be watching for each other. And we are being Christ-like when we can say, how can I meet your needs? You know that? That's when we're being more, because isn't that what Jesus did for us? Isn't that what we just celebrated? The fact Jesus came, it's not what's in it for me. Jesus said, how can I meet your needs? What do the people of this planet need? They need forgiveness. They need hope. They need peace. And Jesus died to pay for that. So, and I think, you know, one of the most powerful statements that we can say as husbands or wife is, you know, I'm sorry, I was only thinking of myself. I was only thinking of myself. Just to be able to, you know, this is kind of a sideline, but you know, that is such a powerful thing. Yesterday we played a soccer game, and I think this is the only time this ever happened. I've been coaching for about 14 years. And a ref came to me after. We had a girl that was called offsides. She went for a kick. The linesman called offsides, and we would have scored another goal. We actually won the game, but we would have scored another game. And he came to me and he said, I want you to know, we're not perfect. That linesman was wrong. She was onside. She was not offside. And I told him, I said, do you know, I love this. I love that happened. Because he came to me and said, I'm sorry, you know, I was wrong. And I thought, just the power of that, I've never had that happen. Here's a ref, you know, they're supposed to be all-knowing. And just saying, I showed that we're human. In fact, that's what he said. He goes, well, I just illustrated that we're all human and make mistakes. He goes, that was a bad call. You know, we can really give each other a lot of slack, can't we, if we're just willing to say, I was being selfish. I was completely thinking of myself, you know. Last one. And this is tough too, especially for those of us who always like to be right. But concentrate on reconciliation, not resolution. They're very, very different. Reconciliation means to reestablish that relationship. Resolution means to resolve every issue. So you'll discover that there are things you're never going to There's no simple way to come to an agreement over. It's simply a matter of perspective. Maybe it's not a matter of right and wrong. Now, you might think that. But it's just simply a matter of perspective. If you try to bring everything into agreement in your life, you're going to bump heads. There are things that Cindy and I disagree on. We're going to continue to disagree on. And you know what? We're getting along wonderfully with that. Why? Because we focus on reconciliation, not resolution. We don't have to resolve every problem. We don't have to agree on everything, except our commitment to Christ and to each other. Really, that's foundational. So, James 3:17. Look, this is wisdom. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure. It's also peace-loving, gentle at all times, and willing to yield to others. It is full of mercy and good deeds. It shows no partiality and is always sincere. That's wisdom. He just described, what is wisdom? Wisdom comes from heaven. It's all of those things. It's wise. It's wise to compromise. And sometimes some of you may say, yeah, but maybe there are some real serious issues. Unity without uniformity. There may be some things that are very, very important that you can't agree on. That's okay. Some of you are married to maybe married to unbelievers. Or maybe you know people who are, one's a Christian, the other is not a believer. Let me tell you, there's going to be some maybe even foundational issues, their commitment to Christ and so forth. But keeping that and resolving it. Walking hand in hand without seeing eye to eye. It's really important. Some of you are just tired and worn out. And I guess the only thing I could say at this point is don't give up. Please don't give up. It's worth it. Try this. Try these steps. And they're so important. Some of you, you may need to get some professional counseling and help. I mean, your feet hurt, you go to the podiatrist, right? You got some heart problems, you go to cardiologists. We need some financial help. We go to CPA or a financial planner. And we're not embarrassed about it. Just a problem that comes up, it's okay. Dental problems, go to the dentist. The truth of it is sometimes, go to a Christian counselor. Look, that's what their training is and how to deal with relationships and so forth. It's just they give you tools to help you in your relationship. There's nothing wrong with that. Please. Some of you say, well, I can't afford it. You can't afford not to. I mean, if you've got to take a loan out, we take loans out on houses and cars. What's really more important, frankly? Car's going to be dead in 7 years anyway. But your marriage, other things, I don't encourage people to go taking big giant loans. If you've got to take a loan out for your marriage, that's worth it. It's the only thing I would suggest in that. So, and guys, maybe we're most reluctant to this. So I would just say, because I'm talking to you guys, don't be a coward. If you've got to go get some help, just get it. And you'll be surprised. It takes humility, it takes maturity, it takes some honesty, and so that's important. And of course, ask God for help. It may seem like such a simple, you say, well, of course, you're the pastor, you're supposed to say, yeah, pray. But just how much difference it would make. In Colossians 3:15 says, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts. That's what God wants for all of us, and he wants for every marriage. So let's take these. It's a lot to work on. This, you're not going to do this in 1 week. You say, okay, take one a day. This is going to take some time, okay? But hopefully this will be of some help to you. Let's bow.